There's an aura table up there as well.
Sonic a few arrows about...
just a basic aura.
They actually have 50 cables.
About the Mara de Fabulous.
And now we're being quiet. Okay.
So the first thing I want to just make a few comments about is the Kumbase Sheval Taisa distinction that we saw in the last year. So remember, this is the case of Kamisha Shiyashvel Asafsel. According to most Rishonim, the first four that sit down can be held liable even after the last person sits there. And the reason why they're liable is because they didn't get up. Right? I mean, their getting up would have prevented the bench from breaking. They're liable to Mipnei Shelo Amdu. That was the Miri's position. The Rambam seemed to disagree. The Rambam held that only the Achron is Chayiv, even though the first four people could have stood up on their own. So it sounds like the Rambam thinks that there's no liability, at least in this case, for the Sheval Taisa Nezek. They're not getting up. The Rav explains the Rambam by saying something like this, that the first group of people that sat down are considered to be Mazik the Sheval Taisa, V'achron levado nechshav lemazik v'kumbasei v'chiyuvo mafkia es chiyuvo. So the Rav wants to say there is presumptive liability or prima facie liability for the first four, but it's overridden by the kumbasei liability of the last fellow. That was the Rav's reading of the Rambam. We saw the Chaznish who thinks to think that they're all mazikim v'shev al taisa, but we don't have to worry about that right now. The Rav in that piece elaborates with greater specificity. And the Rav says, Harishonim shelo kamu hiziku es asafsel rak v'shev al taisa, v'pnei shelo kamu kisha achron yasha. And the Rambam correctly points us to the Gemara on Daf Lamed Aleph, where it talks about a person who stumbles and remains on the floor of a Rosh Hasharabim. So if you trip, say, and you lie where you are, and then somebody else comes and trips over you. So it's Machlokes Rishonim whether the person who fell is liable mitam adam hamazik, or whether he's liable mitam bor. So the Rav wants to say, maybe if you're comparing an Adam Hamazik versus someone who's only liable mitam bor, the person who's Adam Hamazik should be liable. Then he says, talking shafilim nitro sha'adam shehizik v'sheva al-taisa chayav midin adam ha-mazik mikamachem shone chiyuv nezek v'sheva al-taisa mikhiyuv nezek v'kumbasei. So the Rav wants to say there's this principal difference between v'sheva al-taisa v'kumbasei and zikin cases. Adam shehizik v'sheva al-taisa chayav mishum shia v'shmir as-gufo. I think maybe Isaac was getting at something like this last week. If you're mazik v'sheva al-taisa, the liability is for shia and shmir as-gufo. So there are, I want to say, there are two grounds of liability. One is Pshia Bishmira. That would be Nezek V'Yoshev Al-Taisa. Kumbase would be a different kind, a more egregious form of Nezek, which is more severe. Okay. Here's the Pitzvei Choshen in Perek Ches. Sif Yudalit and Sif Tesva quotes this case on Lamed Hei of Yadam Shemit Kal. Here he quotes it as the smas position, Echayim Mitam Adam Hamazik, and he says, "Digufo shel Bishon Trei Yochal Lamed Lo Amad Chashiv Adam Hamazik." So the point here is that it seems to be whether a machlokas, whether we're willing to say this kind of sheval taisa of remaining where you are, can constitute Adam Hamazik. So I want to defend the position I put forth on Wednesday very briefly. And my suggestion was that it seems strange to distinguish between Nezek Bekumbase and Nezek Besheval Taisa. Whereas many of you thought that there is this general distinction between Kumbase and Sheval Taisa, and that should apply directly to the world of Nezikin. Does this sound familiar? Yeah? So my first reason for distinguishing and thinking that in Nezikin there is no principal difference between Shabbatai and Kimbasei, whereas maybe in Averos there is that it seems to me that Averos focus more or care more about actions, right? They're right or wrong behaviors, right? Actions in the world. That's why you do a mitzvah, you do an Avera. Nezek is less about actions, and it's more about bringing about wrongful states of affairs. Right? Bringing about the wrong kinds of consequences. And so maybe in Averos, it makes sense to care about Kumbasei Sheva Taisa. Did you act passively or actively? Whereas in Ezekiel, we don't really care about actions. We care about how your behavior brings about certain states of affairs, which I think would mitigate the significance of Kumbasei versus Sheva Taisa. That sound plausible to...
Could it just be like
action
utilitarianism or like rule utilitarianism?
What?
Could it be like rule utilitarianism? Like, we do care about like your action, every single action you do because of the larger rule we're trying to propagate.
But why does it have to be actions? Why can't it just be behaviors, right? I'm saying in Averos, the question is, did you engage in illicit action? So it's like a vice idea.
They're making a society with incentive structure trying to decrease costs in society. So when you do that, it's always forbidden to do this action.
Right.
All of a sudden, you do this action, so even if something bad happens, you can do that action, so you can violate the rule. Yeah. The rule is a heuristic.
But why should you focus on actions and not focus on, like, the... behaviors, let's say. And a behavior can also be a Sheva Taisa. So an action is...
Do you mean Sheva Taisa?
A behavior would be consistent with both Sheva Taisa and Kumbasei.
It's like the Sheva Taisa is much easier to say. You're not doing anything to regulate.
You're
not doing anything to regulate. You can't control people's Sheva Taisa because they're not doing anything. The situation.
Why can't you regulate people's non-behaviors?
That doesn't sound like a coherent sentence.
I can regulate what you can do. You can't remain idle in a Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah, loiter.
Yeah, you can't loiter.
All right, that's a good point. I guess you can formulate
it
already. Well, yeah, I
hear
that. That's a good point.
So my point is that the what's sometimes called the omission commission, right? acting by omission is failing to shovel the snow, and acting by commission is driving through a red light. That's not really that doesn't seem to be such a relevant distinction in the world of Nezikin, where we just really care about whether you're going to cause somebody harm. So it doesn't matter whether you caused it through acting or through staying stationary.
Would you focus more on Ezekiel as a violation of personal rights, of individual rights, ones that people are than to care about the actions of Ezekiel?
Why? I'm saying so long. Why can't a person's rights be violated passively?
Even if you've been harmed, you still did something wrong and you violated someone else's rights. It's just that we haven't really gotten to the point yet where you have to compensate. But nonetheless, the action itself carries inherent significance in terms of you being a perpetrator is violated.
Why must it be an action, right? Why can I violate your rights by... Suppose you have a right to walk on non-icy sidewalks.
I agree.
So I trample on your rights by failing to shovel.
I agree. I guess I'm more confused as to why this should be different from mitzvahs. If you're going to say behavior is such a broad category, then it's inaction in certain
circumstances. So maybe mitzvahs should also focus on this,
right? Yeah, I'm not really
sure why. No, sometimes mitzvahs have outcome focus.
Yeah, it could be. My point is that we know of this distinction of Kumbasei Sheva Taisa mostly from the world of mitzvos. I'm saying there maybe it makes sense to tell a story about actions, but it's less plausible when you want to extend that to the world of Nezikin, which is what's going on in the analysis here. But let me offer a second distinction, which I think will defend my position. And that is that Sheva Taisa usually appears in the Gemara in what kind of context? Yes. Well, the question is, you're going to do something wrong.
A remedy?
No, I don't think it's a remedy. It's more, you're going to do something wrong.
It's like the least problematic.
Yes. And the question is it better to do that wrong passively or actively? So we're asking you, given that you have this choice between performing something, doing an Avera B'Sheva Taisa or Kumbasei, it's preferable to do a B'Sheva Taisa. I think that's very different from the case at hand with the Chamisha Sheyashvu al Asafsol, where we have two separate people. One of them violates a B'Sheva al Taisa, and the other person violates B'Sheva al Kumbasei. It's not obvious that that's a reason to assign liability to the Kumbasei. Right? So let's grant the assumption that Kumbasei Sheva al Taisa applies in the Zikin. it's not clear that it would apply when you're deciding about assigning liability between two people. When the paradigmatic case comes from when one person's doing something and we're just asking what's the best way for him to do it. And the answer is passively rather than actively. So that's another reason to distinguish between the Sheval Taisa case from Mitzvos and Averos and the application of Techamisha Shiyashu Al Savsal. Ben.
In the Mishnah, the Lashon of being Makshir Bemezek also seems to imply that idea in the Gidei Rashi that it's talking about Zimati and Nizko. We don't have that in the Bero, do we? Like Zimati at.
Right.
Like we.
As I guess that draws things like maybe. Nizikin is more consequentialist, right? We care more about the states of affairs that are brought about rather than
the actual
action.
Results, right? Yeah. It's breaching Shira, like it's not about.
Yeah, I think that's 100% right. So, okay, we dominate that at 2:30 then. That was our deal. No, you have to get every single question.
So if we get one more comment that we've done at 2,
So let me just follow up on Ben's point. I think a lot of the examples that we've seen support the idea that there's Chiyuv Nezikin B'Shev Al Taisa L'Gamri. And some of the paradigmatic cases are B'Shev Al Taisa. So, remember the Mechitz, every case of breach Shmira, well, remember we saw this discussion about why you're liable for Mamon HaMazik. If you take this Reb Samson of Al Hirsch idea that the Kinyano is the Gufu HaMurchav, which we saw in the beginning of the year, also found this good Mishnah Halachos who is talking about your property doing malacha on Shabbos, but he said, also a nice formulation. That when your property is acting, it's as if you're not resting. I don't know if he just means to say that you're also acting or is that you're not resting. So this idea is trying to explain that even when your mamon acts, it's as if you're acting in the world. Right, so all of Nizki Mamon is not passive, it's not Sheval Taisa Nezek, it's Kumbasei Nezek, because your property is moving when it causes harm. Same idea we saw in the Meiri's formulation. The Meiri said that when your Gifanim break through the barrier, right, Mechitza Kem Shenifritza, so he said, Mikomachem Yesh Kan Maisa Shelo, Mehushe Gifanim Mispashtim Mikil Pidola, Mumakachim Esatula. Remember this Meiri? The Miri said that when your gifanim extend into your neighbor's property, it's a maisa shelo. Yesh kan maisa shelo. It's your action. And that's consistent with this whole line of reasoning that Nizki Mamon is a maisa shitcha. So I think that supports that even paradigmatic Nizikim is bekum ba'ase. That Bor is going to be an exception, but at least his classic cases are bekum ba'ase. The other view that we saw is that the Nezek is really for the breach of Shira. For the Pshia of Ishmira, that would suggest that a lot of the paradigmatic Nizki Mamon cases are totally B'Shev Al Taisa. Right? So then it makes it more problematic to think that Nizikin B'Shev Al Taisa is just qualitatively different from Nizikin B'Kum Basay. John, are you asking?
Yeah.
So I think that makes a lot of sense.
I don't get the relevance.
Well?
Well, I don't get the relevance.
The relevance to what?
The Saab that says, because of the breach of Shmira. It's not that you're trying to show that there is proof to the idea that there is passive.
Yeah. Paradigmatic Mazikin is also the shape of Haisa.
I mean, paradigmatic. We don't know how Mazik trumps on someone else.
Do we?
Yeah, we do. Can we see a million cases like that?
I don't know if we saw a million. We saw some suggestions that Nabon Azal wanted to make that case. Or at least an Adam Mazik Big Kavana.
So when you say it's
we actually saw Adam HaMazik Big Kavana trumps this game on.
I thought we said Adam HaMazik in general.
I don't know. We certainly didn't see a million cases.
Okay, maybe we didn't see a million. But when you say it's not clear or not obvious that liability should be assigned to the Kumbase, are you saying like it should not be, or like you could hear arguments both ways?
I'm saying it's not obvious.
Right, that just repeated what you said. I gave you two ways of interpreting that.
So are the two ways you went with that? I know there are three ways
to interpret it. It's a rugged choice.
You have a different alternative.
Why does it have to be interpreted?
Your way of saying it was at least all opulent, at least two other ways of interpreting.
Yeah, my point is that I don't see. So even the Rub's distinction wasn't between Adam HaMazik versus Nizki Mamon. His distinction was between as if Shevat Taisa is this inferior breed of Nezika.
Yeah.
I'm saying there's no real indicator, there's no evidence for that.
There's no evidence.
Right.
Right. I mean, what about the Roshan Shofars?
So he's just giving us an explanation for Nizke Mamon. He doesn't say that's the reason why it has to be. He doesn't say that's the reason why Nizke Mamon is Chayiv.
Maybe he comes up with that view because he thinks that this has to be combusted.
It's possible. I mean, I think that's one way of motivating that suggestion. Because you don't see anything in the Gemara that draws this distinction between Nezikin Bekumbase and Shevat Taisa. And if anything, I'm pointing out that the paradigmatic case of Nizkin Mamon, as Ben was pointing out also for Chafti Bishmiraso, are Bishevat Taisa. Right?
I mean, and if you think that Momon Mazik is Shevat Taisa and Adam Mazik is Kumbase,
it's not true to say that Adam Mazik is Bekumbase. Adam Mazik can be perform Bekumbase or Bishevat Taisa.
Maybe all of those things are that distinguish between Adam and Mazik and Adam and Mazik are based on the fact that Adam can be combusted.
Maybe. What does that have to do with anything?
I'm saying, I just want to say your attack on the road. Your attack is that, like, maybe that's not right?
I'm not attacking. Right. Right. I'm attacking the road. I'm not attacking
the road. So I'm going to say that maybe it is right.
Well?
I'm going to defend it. Maybe it is right.
Maybe what's right?
And what's the basis for thinking that it's right?
I mean, I do happen to think that, like, the outcome of court with that about, like, an infringement on people's rights, like, it does make more sense that your activity involved in violating someone's rights, like, makes you more egregiously in violation of their rights.
Because why? Your feet happen to be moving when you do it?
Yeah.
Why does your feet happen to be moving while you violate someone's rights? Why is it if you're moving your feet and not shoveling any worse than you're not moving your feet and not shoveling?
I'm not sure I would agree to that. Your feet happen to be moving.
So give me an argument.
I'm saying, like, there's no connection between the passivity, like, between the activity there and the fact that there's no, whatever. I'm saying, like,
so what's wrong is causing harm to another, then who cares whether you cause it to come by say or Shevat Taisa? That's all I'm asking. And I'm pointing out that paradigmatic Nezikin don't seem to require Kumbase.
I mean, I just don't understand that question, though. If what's wrong is causing harm to another, then what's the risk in passivity? And so you can ask the question, like, why can't you ask that question on every single time you go to Beira?
Because maybe I'm suggesting that maybe Averos are more about actions.
Because maybe Nezikin is more about actions.
Give me an argument.
Why would
Averos
be more about
that
actions?
Position.
Well, why would Averos be more about actions?
Well, all right, anybody else want to weigh in here? Donnie, you seem like very in the way with Isaac. So.
I don't know, we always talk about, like, even if you have
the mice of Avera.
Yeah, you need the mice of Avera. Even if you have the intent to do and stuff like that, like there's a focus on that.
There are very few purely consequential Averas. Right? They usually require some sort of commission, some sort of action. But I'm happy to say that even Averas don't require, there's nothing special about Kumbase. Even the Kumbase Shevat Taisa distinction in Averas is just a triage question. Between violating an aver bekumbase and b'shevat taisa, do it b'shevat taisa zadev.
I mean, it's not just that; it's also like there are different punishments for shevat taisa and bekumbase. Seems to be different severities in general. It's not just a triage question.
So, are you talking about that for some averos you have to do a maisa in order to violate it? That just proves my position.
That for some of it, that when you do an aver, if you do an action to violate it, you're punished differently than if you do that.
Talking about Malkus and Lav Sheva Maisa, Lav Sheva Maisa?
Great. Seems like a relevant point.
So what is that? I mean, that's at the end of the Rishonim. What's the point that you're trying to make? You're trying to make that it's more likely than not that there's a Kumbase Shevat Taisa distinction.
All I'm saying is that it seems intuitive to me that your activity involved in violating someone's rights is a relevant factor in how egregiously you violate their rights.
So I'm saying that seems strange to me given the fact that what's wrong is violating someone's rights. And it just begs the question to think that an activity is relevant.
Also, your view is very Mazik-centric. Like, if you look at it from Nizam's perspective, like, what's the matter? Like,
yeah, but I'm saying it has to be somewhat Mazik-centric, because Mazik has to do something wrong in order to ever be liable.
By doing something wrong, if you mean an action, then it seems false.
I don't mean an action. I mean, like, Malik has to have done something wrong, whether passively or actively, or then he's not have any ground for conversation.
Right.
And Nizam's perspective is like, that would make sense.
I'm just asking you, what's the case? I'm asking you to make the case that Kumba Se factors into this.
I don't think I have, like, a coherent, like, reason why, like, activity, like, is intuitive to me.
Okay.
Probably far from the fact that it seems intuitive and without errors.
Okay, but I started off here by trying to draw two distinctions between the Maisa Vera case and our case. So I can see that the Gemara recognizes the distinction as significant there. I'm just giving us reasons for being skeptical about its significance here. Sally, what do you think? Weigh in.
I tend to agree with you.
As a default?
No. I like your...
Yeah, so my arguments are cogent, right? I mean, it's...
Where's Jackie here?
I always agree with this side.
Okay. So I don't know. We could. I'm happy to be persuaded to the contrary. That's my. I don't have very strong views. I'm just. I'm inclined to think that the distinction is not so relevant. I want to touch on a very related question to this Kumba Se Shevas Taista discussion.
Garmi.
Well, the Ramban and Dina the Garmi, but I'm not interested in Garmi per se. So there's a distinction that's similar to the omission commission kumbase shevataisa distinction, and that's about whether can you be liable for violating affirmative duties rather than just for violating negative duties. So typically we think of nezikin as
violating by not doing.
Right. So we have like I have like a negative duty meaning not to harm you, right? And nezikin usually arises from violating that negative duty, right? Meaning I violated my duty not to harm you, and that generates liability. The question is, can I also be chayiv in nezikin for violating an affirmative duty to assist you? So I think we touched on a case like this. Clearly, if I push you into the pool and you drown, there's some liability for me. If I'm standing at the edge of the pool and you're drowning and I don't help you, even though I can, at little cost to me, can that also generate liability in nezikin? Right? So not just for violating a negative duty not to harm, but for violating an affirmative duty, a duty of assistance to help you. So what do you think? Ellie, what do you think?
I mean, I'm just thinking of, like,
so you see, so yeah. Anybody else have a Donnie?
Isn't that like meshing in like the I guess I say like Yerudea and Zekin? Like remember like I think we had that in Yuri a while back. I forgot exactly. It's like
it's okay, so that kind of difference that maybe.
Yeah, so like an Isser and a Nezek caused the.
Yeah, it was
Nezik
Shana.
Hesh
Shana
Hingar?
Yeah,
Shana. Right. That I think is a little different. That I think it's still a negative duty not to harm, but it's only considered harm based off some principle in your day.
But isn't this also like the.
No, so this is.
It's Lo Tama?
In the specific Lo Tama Dam Riafa case.
Yeah, but isn't that also. That's also on property, right? I thought it doesn't extend
to
property. So.
Yeah, the Rambam has that extension.
Yeah, so
you think it's not? It wouldn't be Nezek.
Yeah,
you wouldn't be Chayv. So you think it's more obvious? Here's Selby listening. Donnie thinks it's more obvious that you should be liable for violating a negative duty than for violating an affirmative duty. I told you that with intuition, right? That's what you think, right?
I guess so.
Right. So
this is just going off of what you hear is saying.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
We just said anything.
Yoni, what do you?
So I think when we spoke about the sugya distinguishing kam and muad, that we said that if you do a shmiya karoi on a muad, then that there's a, like a tzad kula there in terms of the other people in the community kind of knowing that there's a dangerous animal here. So it kind of seems like that sugya was kind of saying that the nizak has a responsibility to protect themselves, and I think that would be counter to. You know, the idea that you have an affirmative duty that you have, transgressed.
Why would it be counter?
What?
Why would it be counter to the affirmative duty?
Because it's saying that at some point you're...
Nizak also bears certain responsibility for himself. But it doesn't take a stand on whether I can be considered a mazik for failing in a positive duty of assistance.
I think it does, because if the nizak, I think the very fact that the nizak is involved in keeping the nizak safe, then all of a sudden it's a shared.
So they're not, you're saying that shows there are affirmative duties?
No, I was saying that it kind of it sounds like it's there and not. I don't think that this is a riot one way or the other.
I would have said the opposite. I would have said, if anything, the fact that a nizak has a positive duty to himself maybe shows that there are affirmative duties. But I mean, I would think that the nizak is.
But the nizak is the nizak, not the mazik. So
well, you maybe have affirmative duties owed to yourself. But it's not clear that he's considered a mazik for failing to. Hold
yeah, he's not a mazik for failing to protect himself.
Yeah, so I don't know. I really see the raya from the
okay
from that case.
Fair.
But, you want to make the case again, or you want to?
No, I didn't think that it was a clear raya. I thought it just. I just wanted to say that the fact that the nizak is involved in protecting the nizak is a relevant question.
In determining whether affirmative duties?
Yeah.
And you think it shows that there are no affirmative duties?
I think it would lean towards that, but I don't think that it's not a KO. Yeah.
So I have to flesh out exactly why. No?
So yeah, I think in the Gemara in the fourth paragraph of Mitzvah, they speak about day laborers that, or day laborers in general, that back out of contracts,
yeah.
Working contracts.
It's not the fourth paragraph, it's later.
So I think that they're kind of some sort of compensation, some sort of tashlumin for failing to either fulfill their contract.
It's difficult, but there someone's backing out.
That it seems like they have a positive duty, and it's also like it's not like you're officially causing harm to someone; you're just not helping cultivate or.
Interesting. You might say there are implicit agreements, though, right? Implicit agreement, or I have a duty to pay you, and then I back out, so the duty to pay still exists. It's not like a nezek proper.
It's like I'm doing nezek to you by not working your field, mm-hmm. even though we had an agreement to do it.
Right. But you might say the agreement is that you would. You would do it, and in the absence of your ability to do it, you have to pay me to do it. So my thing is built into the agreement rather than. So let me just give the one example of this, where I think we do see a clear it's Mahalu Shoshonim where you have liability for violating an affirmative duty. But do all of you agree with Dani that it's more obvious that you should be liable for the violating your negative duty rather than for violating an affirmative duty? Is that you see that that's intuitive in the drowning case, right? If I push you into the water and you drown, I'm liable. If I just fail to take you out, I'm not. Because one's a duty of assistance and one's a duty not to harm. So, yeah, very famous Gemara in Akonis about failing to testify only generates a fiyuv de shamayim, right? Very familiar with tomorrow. We did. So, have you been below? So, the Gemara has this, ilema b'chad. It's ilema betray. It's pshita. So, it's got to be a case of b'chad. So, the chokh shown him here: if you fail to testify for someone, are you actually going to be held liable in the zikin for not upholding your duty of im lo yage v'nasa abono, right? The duty owed presumably to the. To the litigant. So the Ramban in Kudjatin of the Garmi says that you're potter for not testifying, but only because your duty to testify is one of Gemilas Chasadim. Since it's not a strict duty, it's what you sometimes call it's an imperfect duty, it's a Gemilas Chasadim mitzvah, so not doing Gemilas Chasadim can't generate liability. But were the chiyuv to testify something stricter, then it seems reasonable that the Ramban would concede that you would be chayiv to the zikin for not testifying. The Meiri, for example, asks about what's the difference between the Mechitas HaKerem Shenifritza case, where you're liable for not building the wall, and the not testifying case where you're putter. And he quotes Chachmei HaDoros who say, Shemayachar, in the Mechitas HaKerem case, it's noda bevadai shenayisr bo'ayidei kach, harayim kegorim be'adayim. Since you know for sure that the nezek will result from not building the wall, you're chayiv in the zigan. So for the Chachmei Adoros, the distinction between the Eidos case and the Mechitza Kerem case is one of probabilities. So the reason why you're potter in the Eidos case is because it's not certain that Nezek will result from your failure to testify. But in the Mechitza Kerem case, where it follows with certainty that Nezek will result, you are liable. So it sounds like whether you can be liable for breaching an affirmative duty will just depend on whether it's clear that Nezek, that harm results from your failure to uphold the affirmative duty. So for example, in the water case, if it's very clear that the person will drown without your assistance, then it seems very plausible to think that you'd be chayv in zikin. This is made more explicit, I'll take your question in 30 seconds, Leah, by the Rid's Girsa in the Gemara Bava Kama and above, which Seltzer pointed out to me before the Chabura. So the Gemara says, Ayudeus, look, have we been a middle of my askin and the limb of betray Pshita? Rashi understands Pshita that you're chayv in a shemayim with Hatar in the other. So if you're two witnesses who presumably would have been decisive in being Mosi Mamo, Rashi thinks you're still only chayv in a shemayim. Right? Maybe you hold like Ramban, that your duty to testify is a weak chiyiv, it's an imperfect duty, like Gemil Sassadim, or he thinks you can't be held liable for affirmative duties. The Rid just disagrees. He says, "B'maya skin l'liv betray b'dine adam nami nechayev." Dechsev imlo yagav v'nasavono. So according to the Piskei Rid, breaching your affirmative duty to testify on behalf of somebody when they need you can arise in a chiyav nezikin, can create a chiyav nezikin to be mechayev b'dine adam. So it seems like it's machlokas rishonim whether the general rule is correct that you can be chayev for affirmative duties like negative duties. Yeah.
It's important to know that if you really want to use the Midori as you did previously as indicative of the idea that your mamon is acting on your behalf, that it's not super consistent that you're the Midori is comparing that.
It's the same Iri, two different deos.
Oh, it's two different deos?
Yeah, so the first, this is his day, you're a leash and become up. So in both cases, he's trying to distinguish the Aegis case from the Mechitza Kerem case.
Yeah.
In his first answer, his Yira Lee, is that, oh, there's Maisa Shalom in the Gefanin case.
Oh, there's Machlokas in the Midori.
Yeah. And then the Chachmei Doros answer is that Me'achar should know the Bevadai she'isur bo'yedekam, not about active passive, but more about the certitude with which the harm will result. So it's two separate days. The second, I mean, the day that I'm quoting now is the Chachmei Doros, not the Miri.
You don't think the Ramban could be basically saying the distinction between passive between affirmative and.
I don't think so, because I think the Ramban's main point. Sorry,
maybe they pointed that in Ezekiel. Affirmative actions
are yes, that'd be I think it would be an innovative reading of the Ramban. The Ramban doesn't say that. The Ramban says that Misha in a rotza lahayid patr she'en alav chiyav mamo and elmi derech gemios chasadim. Now the Ramban thinks that the Mechitza Kerem case is a case where you are liable because you have a chiyav mamo to build the wall. It's not mitam gemios chasadim. So if you think that the Mechitza Kerem case is an affirmative duty, it's not clear whether that's like an affirmative duty or a negative duty. Right?
Seems like a negative one.
I think it's a negative one. I mean, it's a duty not to harm him, and that's why you have to build a wall. It's possible. I always understood this Ramban as saying that it's a local answer to the nature of the Chiyuv Hagbadas Eidos. It's like not wanting to give tzedakah or not returning a aveda. So I think the fact that he groups these together with these generic gemilas chasadim things implies that it's a narrow chiddush about the nature of hagaras edos, not a general principle that all affirmative duties are gemilas chasadim ones. So for example, in the drowning case, you might say that yes, you're a mazik for not helping the person out.
Right. So basically, the only person that does say there's a distinction between affirmative and negative is me, Rashi.
Rashi here seems to say, I think this Rashi would. Yeah, I mean, I didn't look exhaustively though. For it could be there are people who say this more explicitly. I haven't looked exhaustively. I'm just trying to build the case that there wouldn't be a distinction. Because that's more in line with the view that I'm trying to build now. But it's very possible that there are more clear. I took the other view as more obvious. So it could be that there's more explicit formulations out there. Okay, so that's what I wanted to discuss from the first part of the Mechitza Sakara, of the Kumbase Sheval Taisa affirmative negative duty discussion. Anybody want to make a comment on this for a moment? Okay, so I wanted to just mention two other quick haros about our previous sugya. So both of them pertain to the different ways of appointing Shmira for Nezikin. Joni, don't get confused.
No, I mean, just going back to your discussion with Isaac, I was wondering if that case of the Rambam, where it's not the Rambam's case, it's Mar's case, where the wandering sheep case, where you're allowed
preemptive,
to proactively, preemptively, take care of that. So that seems to be a case completely passive. You know, I'm not doing Shmira. They haven't done any Hezek yet. And yet we're still treating them as Nazikin in a way that we're taking I think it might be a riot for your side, meaning we're they haven't done anything wrong per se in a way that they haven't necessarily become Nazikin. So you can't say that, oh, it really is a case of Kumbase. But nevertheless we're still treating them as Nazikin.
It's interesting, saying they're like Nazikin in virtue of the threat they pose.
Right.
And that shows you that there's some shame Nezek that's relevant even for Sheva Taisa.
Yeah.
So that suppose they're just standing there grazing.
Right.
That's like a sufficient shame Mazik to preemptively chef them.
Yeah.
And that shows that the Kumbase Sheva Taisa is less important. What's important is the states of affair that
right. They
projectively bring it up.
Yeah.
It's an interesting idea that Jonah's suggesting. What do you guys make of it? See what he's saying? He's saying we saw the Rambam at the beginning of the year that if my sheep trespass into your field, you could preemptively shech them even before they cause harm.
Can you see the action of trespass?
Yeah, I think that would be the response.
Is
to say that the trespass itself is a maisa. What if they're just like sitting there? So what?
But still, they trespass.
Right, they did some maisa that they're accountable for.
Yeah, I don't care if it's not that active, but it's still somewhat.
I'm not 100% sure, but I see that I like where the heart is.
I don't remember the Rambam. Like, do you have to trespass, or is it?
Yeah,
like, yeah. It says it has to come.
It sounds like they
trespass.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay. So then, yeah.
That's my recollection. So where's the discussion here with the whole guest, Rosh and? Yeah. I'm sorry. So let me just make a hara here about Shmira. So, in the case of the Masar Shoro Lechamisha Bnei Adam, does anybody remember this case? So the din was, if one person walks off in a case where all of them are needed for Shmira, so Machlokes Rishonim, whether the Achron alone is chayiv, or whether all five split liability. That sound familiar? So the Rush here points out that it may depend on how the other Shomrim respond to the fifth person walking off. So the Rush says, if the fifth person walks off, and the Achirim lo silku atzman mishmiras ha-shor, kishe pasha ha-achar, velo ratu lishmar yoser, kivan she nisharu v'shmiras ha-shor, v'yicholim l'shomer b'lo ha-echad, hein chayavim v'hu padr, sh'ari masar l'kulon shoro, l'chol mi she'yachol l'shomro, v'nisratu l'shomro achidu b'lo chaveru. You see what he's saying? So he's saying, when the fifth person walks off, they say, don't worry about it. We'll take care of the Shmira. Then, he's totally putter. And they become liable.
Is it up to them, really?
Well,
they accept the liability.
It makes sense, right? They're accepting liability.
Deal.
Right?
They're accepting something that they can't just
wear.
But aval, im amrlo, ab enoch rotze lishmor, gam anu misalkin atzmeinu mishmiraso, kulon chayavim. But if when he walks off, they say, look, we're a team. If you're walking off or all walking off, then they split liability together. So the Rush's point is that whether they share liability or whether he alone bears liability, whether he's totally putter or whether they share liability depends on how they reacted to his walking off. If they're willing to accept Shmira, then it becomes their Shmira alone and his putter. But they reserve the right to say that we don't want to be Shomrim unless you remain with us. That's the Rush's argument. And he seems to ground that in the idea that the Mahke was Matar L'Kulan Shoro L'Chol Mishayachol L'Shomra. Right, that he really just gave it to the group of them, to whoever between them is able to exercise Shmira. So if four of them decide that they could carry the Shmira on their own and are willing to, then they shift the liability away from the fifth guy to them. Now the Yamshel Shlomo thinks that this analysis of the Rush really depends on exactly how the Minoy Shmira was formulated by the Mafkid. So he quotes the Rush, he says, Aval and Pirish Behedrev Amrani Emsor Lacham Shori Shetishmaru Kulchem Biyachad, the five of you as an indivisible unit should exercise Shmira, then Imkain Mimelak Shasilaka Akhar Pasha Vyesh Picholas Biarachem Lashon Gam Hain Pasha Kulam Kayavim. He thinks that it doesn't matter how the other four respond, even if they say we'll take on the Shmira, still they all five share liability, because that's how the Mafkid appointed them as a joint unit. Okay? And then he makes the further ha'ara that even in a case of the Rush, where the Mafkid appoints each one, or whoever is able to control Shmira, they're appointed as the Shomrim, if the fifth guy walks out and the other four accept Shmira, so on the Rush's view, the fifth guy is Pater Lagamri, the Marshal argues that if the fifth guy can't pay, if the first four who accepted Shmira cannot pay, the Chamishi Shepasha Ashiru, Afshehu Pater Kisha Achirim Lo Nistalku Mishmirasam, Mikal Makam Yachal Bal Ashur Lash Due Dina Ima Ashir Shepasha, Vahu Lezil Vishtoi Dina Imahem. He thinks in the Rush's case, where he appoints Kol Misha Yachal Lishomro, and the four accept liability on their own, that's a private deal between the four Shomrim and the fifth Shomer. But with respect to the Nizak, he can still sue the fifth Shomer for the entire value of the Nezek, and then the fifth Shomer can just collect that amount from the four who accepted Shmira from him. So the Marshal's point is twofold. A, it depends how the Mafkid appointed the Shomrim, Kulchem biyachad or Kol Mishayachal l'Shomro. Even on the assumption that he appoints Kol Mishayachal l'Shomro, and then there's a private deal between the four and the one, that becomes only a private deal between the four and the one, not a binding deal between the Nizak and the five.
Could be that very last part.
The last point? And then the fifth guy walks up and says, see ya, and the four say, okay, we got it covered. That's a private deal that the four people are covering the fifth guy's liability. It can affect their status vis-a-vis the Nizak. So the Nizak can still the fifth guy, can always sue the fifth guy, and then just the fifth guy has a private right to recover from the four who accepted Shmir from him. That's the Marshal's argument. So I isolate this from our broader discussion because this is really a Shmira question about how you different ways you can appoint Shomrim and whether Shmira can be joined. It's not really strictly a Nezek question about who the Mazik is. That's why I isolate it from our discussion of the Sugya. But it's an important idea that emerges from our Gemara. Let me just make one brief point related to this. The Shach in Chosh and Mishpat Simenai in Zion quotes a tshuva of the Ramah about whether if you have Beis Shomrim who jointly accept the Shmira, Shekiblu Shmira B'yachad, the Rama argues, Lo Armina De'echad Arev Ba'ad Chavero. You don't say that they're automatically considered to be guarantors of the other person's liability. So if Avram and Eli want to borrow my car for the afternoon, or they become joint Shomrim, it's not the case that Avram automatically becomes an Arev for any liability created by Eli and vice versa. What's the Raya of the Rama? Our sugya. Bava kama yira ben aleph, mazar shoro l'chamisha ben yada, im silek echad atma ben ashmira ha'nisharim chayavim v'hu pater. You see that the fourth guy could become pater by walking off and transferring the shmira to the other four. If there's an assumed mutual arvus, then he shouldn't be able to do that vis-a-vis the Nizam. The Shach is very upset with this Raya, and he says, our Gemara is not a proof to the proposition that they're not Arevim Zebazeh, because our Gemara is just talking about Chiyuv Nezikin. Our Gemara just wants to know, is the fifth guy who walks off considered to be a Mazik, Betoras Nezikin? But it's very possible that he's not a Mazik at all, but yet he's liable under a separate idea that he's an implicit Arev for his fellow Shomer. Kind of, it's a very interesting claim, right? It's V'haraya shehevia rabbi perakamet v'barakama eno raya klal d'hasam b'shas v'poskim lo mayri el em yeschaya v'din mazik. That's all you get from our Gemara.
Who's making the actual homeless plan?
Well?
Isn't the Shach making the actual homeless
plan? I think they're very similar points. They are very similar points. I'm not sure if the Yamshel Shlomo wants to yerchayev mitam mazik, because klape the nizak, you can say you are mazik by walking off your shmira. So from my perspective, you caused the harm. Had you stayed, it wouldn't have happened. Whereas it seems like the Shach is interested more in this separate idea: do you implicitly serve as a guarantee for your co shomer? That's how I think they may come apart. Not sure if that's
answer.
That's my sense.
Right. When you said the Yom Shlomo, I just assumed it was basically saying, like, yeah, you can be collected from me, but the opposite number.
Yeah. I think he's saying that from the perspective of Nizak, he's saying, you're the Mazik, because I appointed all five of you together. If you enter some private arrangement with the other four, that's between the five of you. Okay, that's what I want to take out of the shop. Was somebody, yeah, Donnie.
Yeah, Yom Shlomo, I didn't really understand when you were reading it. The whole idea of the Asher, what was that?
So this is on the assumption that even if the Shmira was given over to Kol Misha Yachol Lishmar, and the four accept liability away from the five, the fifth guy says, I'm leaving, and they say, okay, don't worry, we got it covered. That does not change the liability that the fifth guy has with respect to the Nizak. The mafkid.
So, but is that saying, like, maybe I was reading too much into this? Is that saying conditionally, like, it's only when he's an usher that we can do this?
No, it's just a case where we're assuming that the
other guy is.
If the nizak can collect directly from the four, then it's an easy case, right? He comes to the fifth guy, the fifth guy says, they'll cut out a check for you. And everyone goes home happy. Mm-hmm. Right?
But if the four
can pay, then the nizak.
So what if the four can't pay and he's like an ani? Like, is that, like...
Who's an Ani?
The fifth guy. Oh, wait, so Pasha... Oh, wait, who's the Usher here?
That's the fifth guy.
Yeah, the fifth guy. So what if he's an Ani? Then he's not liable. I don't get why would there be...
Well, they wouldn't have money to pay back. That's
just Mitzia. You're saying that's...
It's the reason why you have to go after that.
Yeah, okay, that makes a lot more sense.
That's to construct a case in an easy way.
In terms of calling someone a mazik or not calling someone a mazik, if we say that they were posheya by leaving, isn't that definitionally a mazik? Because I mean, if it's your animal that does damage to something, then you're the mazik just by being posheya and your shmira. So
yeah, but here there are four other people who said that they could take care of the shmira.
Yeah, but if we say that the relationship, Yom Shlomo says that the relationship between the Nizak and the fifth guy doesn't change, and he has to pay.
It's a good point.
That means he was Poshea and he is a Mazik.
It's a good point. The answer is that Poshea is used in two ways. Poshea means that he was negligent and walked off, and Poshea can mean that he actually breached his duty.
Uh-huh.
I think here, he was Poshea by walking off. It's not so clear that his Poshea by walking off is what caused the Nezek to occur.
But his relationship to the Nizak didn't change.
Because he was appointed a Shomer and he walked off.
So he was, but it was not Poshea, yet he's a Mazik.
It's not clear, right? It's not so clear if he was.
But I guess, saying that Poshea is an equivocal term, I guess, is helpful.
Yeah, you see that. You see that very obvious, very clearly in the Meiri's analysis of this. So, yeah. Okay, this brings us to the last Tara I want to make in this discussion. So the first Ara was about the Kumbasei Shevel Haisa. The second Ara was about the different ways of specifying the key of Shmira. And the last aura here is about Stam Safsal Shaul. So it's related to the Shmira idea, but not about appointing a Shomer to prevent the Zikin. It's about who implicitly has a right to use a Safsal, and what rights and privileges come along with this implicit rishus to use it. So I'm going to ask Ben, because Ben's not here, and so... Right, can't answer. I mean, that's
a 250 of advice.
Yeah. So Ben, what's the answer? Ben's not here.
Wait. No,
he's not there. Okay. So my agreement with him is not on board. So members of the Gemara and the Mishnah Shiyashvil HaSafsol talks about Papa Baraba. Cole was very excited to learn that Rashi already has the phrase Balbasar. He didn't realize that it goes that far back. So the Rishonim are all trying to struggle. They all struggle. What's the significance of Papa Baraba being a Balbasar? So
it might be a busy class.
Right. So that's what the Miri thinks. The Rashbam thinks that it's very important. And Tosus quotes some Daf Yud. And Farish Rashbam did not get Papa Baraba. Lefisha l'stam b'nei adam hu shaul l'chol haba me'ilav le'shev aleha. Ki stam safsul asu l'kach v'hava kimei samach mas malacha. So stam people who sit down on a bench. So, you know, you sit down on these benches, and here, even if I have a bench in my front lawn, and you sit down on it and it breaks, you're putter. Because stam safsol is shalul lekach. So, Avram, why is Papa Baraba different? So, Papa Baraba is different. Shehu mishuna v'kave mishar b'nei adam. Stama ein shalul. Because he's so obese... So we don't say, Minastam, it's not Shaltim. He doesn't have a right to sit down on the bench. That's why the Gemara thinks that Papa Baraba alone is liable, but anybody else who falls within the normal range of usage is Pater. Okay. That doesn't matter.
I
know.
That was a great pedagogic moment.
So Rabbeinu Tam disagrees. We saw Rabbeinu Tam's shita already. Rabbeinu Tam is a different shita. He thinks that it has to do that he's so heavy that he prevented the other people from standing up. That's the significance of his weight. But it has nothing to do with Stam Saf Shul Shul Lekach. Now, the Tosfos himself in the Rashbam shita quotes this little story. When we told Kach, Hutter, I assume this is the Rashbam, Arba b'nei adam sheyashu al safsal echad shel almana v'shavru, v'arabu b'azriel chiyev v'shalim. So, Selter, what was the story here with the...
Yeah, so these Adam Jews who sit down on the bench, they're not...
Shel almana, nonetheless.
Right. They're not overweight, so they sat down on the bench and broke it, so there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
They were allowed to sit down.
Because tam safshel shol lekach.
Right.
So, chiddush, no chiddush.
Okay, there's an issue with our Gemara, because our Gemara seems to impose a fee, at least in the Hakmina, to the first four guys who sat down.
So Tosa says, any case of liability in the Gemara, it's only talking about someone who's Papa Baraba.
Right.
That's Tosa's, that's how they make sense of it. But there can only be liability if you're out of the range of normal usage. Otherwise, you're putter, because Stam Safsal Shalaka. So Isaac, what do you think? Think Tosis is right about this, or you think the Rashbam is right, or you think Rav Azriel is right?
I think Rav Azriel is right.
Why?
I gave him the right to use the bench.
Stam Safsal Shaul Lekach.
So what?
It's since...
Stam Safsal what?
It's Shaul Lekach, also Lekach.
It could be hard to use
this. Stam Safsal also Lekach, how can based on Machmas Malacha.
Why do they have the right to use it?
Because that's the Stam Safsal is made for being used, so you have Rishus. And once you have Rishus, Tosa says, it's like Havik Mesa Machmas Malacha. So suppose the Shulmans have a bench in front of their house. It's known that all benches are for people to sit and relax.
Okay, I mean, I just wish you could see it, that's what people make their benches for, but okay, granted that everyone feels like open, allowing anyone to sit on their benches,
yeah,
normally used, then yeah, of course, you're going to violate their rights.
And what?
You're going to violate any rights. Like, why would
you violate?
Yeah, but Noah says you broke the bench, you violated their rights.
But they knew that the person who took them, they made a bench for everyone.
well, maybe they knew the risk, but they knew the risk and they assumed that they'd be compensated. Sit on my bench, but pay me if you break it.
So be a considerate sitter.
Should it actually boil down to what people expect when they allow their wrenches to be used by everyone?
So no reason to think that.
Well,
so
out there.
No, I mean, just because I allow people to sit down on my wrenches, I mean, I allow 20 people to sit down at one time, which is going to...
Okay, but suppose only one person sits down. Suppose only one Papa Garabo.
Well,
right.
So that seems to be...
That happened.
So I think that would be a valid reason, blah, blah, blah.
You think it would? You think this is right?
Yeah.
You think you don't see any jump here, or... There's no,
Okay, I think we should know that they
shouldn't. There's no logical gap in Dose's argument, Papa Garabo? See the logical gap? Is there a logical gap here? I'll give you a hint. Gotta be somewhere in these 2.5 lines.
Are you saying that Toastwood has within itself a logical gap? That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Wait, claims.
Leah, want to help us out?
Logical gap. You know how well I did in logic.
That's right. Better than I did. I'll tell you that one. Better than I did.
Too logical, Wayne.
Logic and why you did okay. Because it was logic.
It wasn't graph theory.
Right. Graph theory.
Well, what are you
getting at?
Tell me.
Am I getting at?
Should
give it away?
No. At least, like, in the pedagogy.
Are you just
like, you have to work for it.
I should pull it up. It's hard to read.
Yeah, it's hard to read. I'll read it to you.
You make it big.
That was the story.
It's problematic to say that you jump from the fact that most benches are able to hold five people to say that it is considered a small amount of time to sit on it.
Okay, but, let's assume just one Pablo Barabas sits on it and it breaks. Is there liability? Tosis wants to say no.
Sorry.
One regular person sits on it and it breaks. Right?
Oh, that's a really good point. But we would presumably still say yes. You're fine.
Well, Tosis thinks you're putter because Stam Safsul's Asir Lekach. Right? The Shulman say, come. The Shulman say, please sit. They have a bench in front of their house that says, please sit. And then, a non-Papa Rabba comes and sits. So Tosis wants to say you're putter. Right, because the bench is made for that. And how can Mesa Mach Mas Malacha? We know Mesa Mach Mas Malacha is potter.
Is he assuming that Stam usage is...
A Papa Barabba will be chayyeh because that's not within the range of Rishus, right? So suppose the Shulman sign says, please sit if you weigh less than 200 pounds. Right?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, is the gap when he goes...
Yeah, maybe 300 pounds. I don't know. Papa Barabba.
That considering that, like, it's considered made some Machmat Lacha.
Yes, why is that a Kiddush?
Because Mita Machmat Lacha is like a standard that there's that like inherent in objects.
Well, it is. The bench is made for sitting, and it broke in the context of the sitting, so it's made some Machmat Lacha. Seems descriptively true.
It's descriptive. Yeah, well, that is it prescriptively.
Okay, it's a good word, but good alliteration, good rhyme thing, but like, what's the... Yeah.
It seems that Rinnah was implying that Papa Barabba sat down first, and other four guys sat down after him, and everyone would be putter, but it's still Papa Barabba's fault for being fat.
Okay, I don't know, I think you're focusing too much on the Papa Barabba part.
The point I'm trying to make is that the wasted contribution is always the same, irrespective of the fact that one person tips it over. Everyone else is still contributing.
Yes, it's an interesting point, right. It is. It's a bit of a puzzle here in Tosos.
Yeah,
how exactly?
That doesn't really make sense.
Right. Why each person should have Rishus?
Yeah.
Right. If cumulatively they would break the bench.
That's
a bit of a puzzle more for the second half of.
Okay. Fine.
So wouldn't that also be part of the
Machmas
Malacha?
Right. Maybe.
Like the sign wouldn't say sit on the bench as long as you're not 300 pounds.
Right.
You sit on the bench as long as you're not going to push it above.
Fair point. I think it's right, but it's not the puzzle I want to focus on, Selter.
But normally, Meitza Machma Malacha case, there's no direct contact between kind of the user of the borrowed item and the borrowed item that falls dead. As in, if I borrow your cow,
yeah, but I borrow your hammer.
Raising,
but I borrow your hammer and I chop away at things and it breaks in normal use, Meitza Machma Malacha.
that you say that hammer breaks because the nail was
Yeah, but I was just supposed it is Mesa Machmas Malacha, right? I mean, so there's something there's a gap here.
What's the final cause?
Pointed out by the Marshal. Slightly different point. He's saying that there's a difference between nosein rishus lehishtamesh and being mashiel something to a shoel. That's the distinction that the Yom Tov Shlomo has in mind. Is that what you're saying, Isaac?
I'm happy
to give.
Yeah, specifically and case by case, accept that.
His point is that nesinas rishus is just a right of use, right? It mitigates the trespass. You're not trespassing when you sit here, but it's not like Sheila, where I'm giving you these robust rights of usage, such that the only coherent interpretation of a Sheila is that, of course, I'm giving it to you to use in a way that if it dies, machmas malacha, you're pater. All this is a reshus to sit up. It's a reshus such that you're low nikra gazlan when you sit on it. Whereas a Sheila, when I grant you these explicit rights of usage and there's a Shoel Mashiel relationship, then maybe you're considered to be fully putter for Mesa Machmas Malacha. That's what he calls a Sheila Midas Bailim. And then you can say it's Adai to the Hachi Kashaya. Aval Kishehu lo bike shum dagar, the Gamze lo Hishielo, Afshestama Asur Yeshiva Mikamakam Lanasam Rishus Leshiv Lifter Vishvira. You see that? So he thinks the reshus doesn't include a p'tur tashlum and a p'tur nezikin. All it does is mafkia the yisur gezel. But of course, the bialim reserved the right for compensation. So there's a distinction between reshus and sheila. I think it's a very, once you see the marshal, it's a very obvious point.
Right. So does Tosfos just not agree with the din that he has?
So you see, Tosfos disagrees with this, right? So the machlokas here.
Yeah. So then it's not really the problem with Tosfos.
Yeah, I guess, right. You could. According to Tosfos, there's no logical gap in the argument.
Right?
Yeah. Marshall's pointing out that there is a logical space, though, between... Ben, I asked you so many questions while you were gone, you didn't have the answer.
But I get them wrong, though, did I?
Huh?
I get them wrong.
Well, it depends. You know, types
of... But that wasn't the condition. The condition was they had to answer them correctly. Right. Does everybody see? He's pointing out there is a logical space between saying you have reshus and therefore p'tur mesa machmas malacha. Marshall's saying that's false because you could have reshus, you're not a gazlan, but in order to have the p'tur mesa machmas malacha, you have to be a real shoa. Now I think Yoni's right to point out that Tosos didn't think there was a logical gap there, and Mario Lee Malin over here has a nice Mario Lee. You never see those two volumes of Yishei Bar Yalib in that Nachron section? So right, he's come to Biskarov, and then he was in the Mir in Brooklyn for many years. So Barley has a nice answer here. He says, Manir Vitam Pluktayu, so the reason why the Rashbam holds, so he thinks the Rashbam agrees with the Marshal. So actually, Yonim is slightly different. He thinks that the Rashbam agrees that there's a logical space between having Rashus and being a Shoel. He says, look, if the bench sitters are actually Shoelim, they should have liability for Onsen. I don't know if his proof here is. I think his proof here is wrong, but it's not really enough to get into that. I don't think it. I don't think it's obvious they don't have a fee of saying on the Rashbam too. But he says here, Elavada near the in kavanas Rashbam the din show Elohim, Elakivan the stam safsel asu the yeshivas bnei adam, the vaylavino makbid, vahavin the sinas reshus lehishtamshus yeshiva, the kivan the yeshlo reshus lasheves. Lo havi ale shame mazik klal temashe yoshev ala safsel. See what he's getting at?
You're not even a mazik who's hunter.
Yeah. He thinks there's no exactly. He thinks there's no such thing as being a mazik once you have rights of usage. I think it's a very controversial idea.
Well,
you might say when you have rishus lahazik, you don't have a shame mazik because the nizak waives his rights against nezek. But it's not obvious at all to say that once you have Rishus L'Sheves, you can't have a Shem Mazik. It's just confusing the idea of, he's saying once you have a right to use, you can never be considered a Mazik.
Do
you think he's saying never? He says, the Halo Yeshlo Rishus Sheves, V'Heter Yoshev, Masha Adam, Asu HaBirshus, V'Heter, Eino Lav Shem Mazik. Whenever somebody does something, Rishus V'Heter, it can't be a Mazik. That's like saying, whenever you give a doctor consent for a surgery, you can never be considered a mazik. And you might just say, well, there are certain limits. You could have rishus to do the thing, but you don't have rights to be mazik in the course of doing it. And this is madam medame harashbam l'shov the pater beisam akmas malacha who degam mishem mukhaf the yisod zed the mishdamish rishus in olaf shem mazik. He thinks you just see the paradigm from Shoel that once you're doing it with rishus, you can't be considered a mazik, and that's the idea of beisam akmas malacha.
Isn't the Rashbam at some point the way you're doing it is the usual expected way to do it? So then
you're sitting normally.
Yeah, so then it's not like the doctor comparison or any other comparison. But it's a very compelling point. If I need permission to do X, if you do X, it's always because it can happen.
Can you do X prime?
If I give you permission to do X,
you're not jumping up and down,
and
yeah,
something
not,
goes
yeah.
wrong.
It's not like the case is the Sakimta that you're using the right to show that you just sit on it.
Yeah, it has to be Mahmoud Malafa if you do something.
It seems like the Rashbam makes the most sense. I don't really think Marshall's challenge to it. I would read theoretically that should be a challenge, but the challenge doesn't matter in this case.
I'm not sure.
There's no indication of negligence. There is permission. So, like, where is the room then to say all permission is not sufficient?
Because you didn't have permission to be mazik, you have permission to use.
But it was onus that was mazik. You did it in the way that, like, if onus is defined as doing things as expected and something unexpected out of your control happens, that is this. It is built for this number of people, less than or equal to that number of people sat on it. They didn't inappropriately sit on it.
I'm not sure. I mean, so. You think if I have tools in my garage,
yeah,
and people know that I'm not machbid, right? So come use it. And they take it and it breaks in the course of normal usage, you think there's no chiyuv to compensate me?
No, it seems like not. It's onus.
Well, that's machlokas here between the Rashbam and the Marshal.
No, right, fine. Give me a machlokas, but the point is it's not a logical consistency or a gap.
Yeah, I agree it's not a gap.
Yeah,
you think my challenge here is too strongly worded?
Yeah, there's no challenge. It's just about focus about, like, what are the extent of liabilities that include a bar.
I guess I just don't see the reason why Rishus should vitiate a Shem Mazik. That's what I'm having a little trouble.
If Nezik said,
why can't you
set limit? Then there's no Shia here at all. You did everything you're allowed to do. You have no permission to use it. And you used it the way you have no permission to do.
But not all. I mean, Adam Amazek doesn't have to stem from Shia per se.
I mean, it clearly does to an extent.
Adam
clearly Shia when you hurt somebody, you are Hoshea, and
right,
your duty to not harm.
Right.
If anything, this just seems like a question of, like, what extent do we say that the general term that applies?
Right, you can see he thinks Arbina Kam, and he thinks Ram also. Don't disagree on this Yisod, the Safsal, also Vishal, the Sheves, the Sheves Ben Yadam, but I'll sphere like the Gam Machia Gam, the Mishnamish Bershus, Yeshal of Din Mazik. He thinks the machlokas here within 2 days is whether it's true that Rishus vitiates Nezek.
Would you agree if I was a socher? This wouldn't be a question.
If you were a socher.
And the exact same thing happened. There's no question about it. I rent your bench to sit on it.
Right.
I sit on a normal leg break, so I'm obviously puffer. This just seems to be a question of like, what are the liabilities and rights of a show up?
But it's not a show-up here, it's Rishus.
Well, if you're a show-up...
It's not, okay, if you have Rishus to use something, then you're just a show-up for it, no? And I just say, you have Rishus to use my thing, you're a show-up for it.
No, but his point, no, he says, the Inkavanas are Rashbam that didn't show up. He thinks you're less than a show-up.
Okay, fine, even less than a show-up.
The question is just the relationship between Rishus and Nezek.
But the point I'm making is just that, it seems the question is, when you're not getting anything back, and you harm something in the regular use, are we more strict than we normally would be in liabilities in an actual contractual relationship? But that's not really a question.
No, I think the question is, does Rishus vitiate Shem Nezek?
But that's clearly not the question, because there are cases where we would obviously say it does. That's what I'm saying.
That's a special Shoah relationship where the
but
only
so
way to.
At the end of the day, that would be the reason that you would be potter. So clearly Rishus can say that, can waive the liability of Nezek. The only real question here is, what do we consider this like pre Shoah status or this lower than Shoah status?
Right. I don't know, what do the rest of you think? I mean, I hear the arguments.
Yeah.
I hear where you're coming from.
Can you call you Kira?
Well, yeah, it's like phone a friend. In emergency, it's the eliminate possibilities. What do the rest of you, Yoni, what do you think? Do you agree with Liad?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure if I understood. But if you had a case where someone was a Shomer Chinam, and then they used Shomer Chinam of a bench, and then they used the bench. They were a skinny guy, and they used the bench, and then they broke, and then it broke. So a Shomer Chinam is Chayev B'Pshia.
Right.
That's known.
But if we're going to,
I don't know, is it Shlicha Siyah though? I don't know, is he allowed to use it or?
Okay, fine.
I think it would depend. It would depend if you had Rishus.
So then it's a bad case.
Right.
I mean, the point that I was trying to make is that maybe we could say we can
something different about Shomer.
Yeah. Shomer is different.
Right. I think that is the point. Shomer and Shol would be different. And that's the machlokas here between the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam. For the Rashbam, you could learn from Shomer, that's what Liad's pointing out. What you see from the Shomer case is that Rishus vitiates Nezek. Right, Liad?
Yes, exactly.
And that's what he's saying. That's what the Rashbam is drawing of Mesa Machmas Malacha. Not that it is Mesa Machmas Malacha, not that you are a Shoel, but that you see from Shoel this principle that Rishus vitiates Nezek. And that's what Rabbeinu Tam and Rambam are denying.
So
that it's consistent to be given Rishus and still have a Chiyuv L'Shalom.
Yeah.
I'm sure these are Ma'asim B'Chol Yom, right? You give somebody Rishus to use something,
yeah,
less than Sheila, and is there Ptur Nezek in those cases? Okay, that's what I wanted to bring out of this,
well,
this discussion.
Well, probably very rarely happens.
Very rarely happens?
Once
there's Sheila, then it didn't make Machmas
Malacha. Right, Sheila just means you're doing something on the bar. It's only these weird cases where, like, you make something that, like, you don't have to.
Really,
like,
never heard
there
of people who take pens, assuming they know people aren't makbid, and you know, they end up destroying pens. We're not up to that part of the sector yet.
It's less
so we have a few more minutes, actually.